This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back. Mike Max in for Chad Hartman. Chad will be back tomorrow. Tonight, 6:30 to 8, the Bash to raise money. Virtual Bash. Dave Lee heads it for a patio at the Masonic Children's Hospital. Great cause. Tune in 6:30 to 8 or catch it on Twitter or Facebook if you want to see video of it as well. Joining us right now, Philip Stinson on the CenterPoint Energy Home Service Plus Hotline. He is a professor in the Criminal Justice Program at Bowling Green University. We welcome him to the program. Thank you, Professor Stinson, for joining us.
Oh, it's good to be with you, Mike.
Yesterday, obviously, I think a lot of people are still trying to figure this out. As calmer heads start to prevail, they're going, is it possible there's a great case to be made for the police officers in this? And technically, even though it might not be the result we want, technically you can see how the law read. How do you read it?
Well, these are difficult cases. And in this particular case, the facts are just so bizarre. And there are a lot of irregularities. There are a lot of things that were done wrong leading up to the killing of Breonna Taylor. But when we look at the actual shooting by the officers, you know, the legal standard is that a police officer, an on-duty officer, is legally justified in using deadly force if the officer has a reasonable apprehension of an imminent threat of serious bodily injury or death being imposed against the officer or someone else. And the Supreme Court of the United States has said that that's the standard of objective reasonableness. In other words, whether a reasonable police officer in that situation, without the benefit of hindsight, would have perceived such a threat. And the inconvenient fact here, the unfortunate thing, is that a shot was fired from within the apartment, actually injuring a police officer. So the police officers were returning fire. So when a prosecutor is looking at that, prosecutors thinking downstream, they're thinking, can they obtain a conviction? And we know that these are very difficult cases when a charge is brought for murder or manslaughter to actually obtain a conviction, because juries are very reluctant to second guess the split second life or death decisions of on-duty police officers in potentially violent encounters. So that's what's at play here. It's a very difficult legal standard. Now, that is not to say, though, that other criminal charges might not be appropriate. And I think that we need to wait it out here and see what the United States Attorney's Office does in Kentucky in terms of whether they're going to bring any charges, for example, criminal deprivation of civil rights charges. I think that's certainly a possibility here.
Is it not unusual for the FBI and once it gets to the feds for them to supersede what was happening at a local level?
Absolutely. If you go all the way back looking at the legislative history of one specific statute, it's 18 U.S.C. 242. The real purpose of that statute is for the federal prosecutors to come in and charge local officials, local officers, when the state criminal courts, the state prosecutors, have failed to bring charges, failed to successfully charge an officer, or sometimes they've obtained a conviction, but the sentence is deemed by the U.S. Attorney's Office to be de minimis. In other words, they don't think they've received satisfactory sentence and punishment. So usually in these cases, the decision by the U.S. Attorney's Office comes after the state has had a chance to decide what they're going to do, and sometimes they wait for those cases to play out. So I think that's what's going on here, and it's anyone's guess as to what will happen.
What is wanton endangerment?
Well, it's really extreme negligence. So under the Kentucky statute, somebody who wantonly engages in conduct which creates a substantial danger of death or serious physical injury to another person can be charged with that crime. It's actually a felony, and it's punishable by up to 5 years in prison. It's a serious charge. But interestingly, and I think a lot of people have taken note of this in the last day, it has nothing to do with the killing of Breonna Taylor. It has nothing to do with the officers shooting into that apartment. It's actually related to shooting into another apartment. That's the basis for these charges.
When they don't wear body cams or they don't activate body cams, I mean, we all ask the same question. Why isn't it just standard procedure at this point that you don't hit the on button?
Well, they should. I don't even know in this case whether they were outfitted with body cameras, but it ought to be standard equipment. You know, body cameras are very expensive. The technology is changing quickly, and there's a lot of research that, you know, that's mixed, frankly, as to the effectiveness of it. But here's the thing. Here's why body cameras are important, as are security camera videos and surveillance videos and dash cam videos and smartphone recordings from citizens. In these cases, historically, the police have always owned the narrative. They write up the reports, they make the statements, and we know that in some instances, officers write reports up to justify whatever actions they've taken. That's not uncommon. That's not to say that every police officer is a liar. I'm not suggesting that. But what happens with the videos is that it creates a situation where sometimes what investigators find and prosecutors find is that the video that the statements and reports made by officers are sometimes factually inconsistent with the video evidence. So that's important. It's important to have those video recordings, and it's unfortunate we don't have that here.
In Minnesota here, of course, we sit and wait and we try to compare and contrast because we know it's coming with the George Floyd and the officers. There was not a shot fired there, obviously. The video telling, compelling, however you want to look at it. But it's different because they're governed by different laws. Give me the comparisons and the contrast to what we're going to see as you compare George Floyd's situation to Breonna Taylor's.
Well, I think we still don't know what's going to happen in the federal courts, frankly, in either instance, in terms of the officers involved in the George Floyd killing and the Breonna Taylor killing in Tennessee. So a lot of that at this point is still unknown. And it's unknown whether these defendants will take these cases to trial. It's possible that one or more of these cases ends in a plea bargain. And I never want to, you know, speculate as to what a jury or even a judge in a bench trial will do. You can't predict the outcome of these criminal cases. But I think it's going to take many, many months, if not years, for these cases to work their way through the courts, both at the state court level, at the county, as well as potentially in the federal courts. It's a long journey, and I would encourage people just to not lose focus, to pay attention, and to keep an open mind to see if justice prevails.
Okay, so Officer Chauvin has his knee on the neck. We all know the video. We all know the story. Is it difficult to prove, and I don't know where you would look for a precedent here, that his intent was to kill as opposed to subdue? Is that, I know everybody out there has got this opinion and blah, 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 but is it right. difficult to prove that?
Absolutely, because the defense has a strong argument that to be made in terms of at least, you know, the potential of reasonable doubt with one or more jurors saying that that the officer's intent was to subdue him, to protect him from himself and others because he thought he was under the influence of drugs and they were waiting for EMS to respond. I think that is an interesting defense because it's something that jurors could buy into.
Would Chauvin take the stand in a case like this to describe his intent on how he had been trained, or is that too dangerous?
Well, it's always dangerous. You know, I used to be an attorney, and it's a very dangerous thing when an attorney and their client make a decision for the defendant in a criminal case to take the witness stand in their own defense. But what we see in these cases where police officers are charged with homicide offenses is that more often than not, it completely unravels the prosecution's case at that point because the jurors, again, are just very reluctant to second guess a split-second decision. It's usually in shootings, but the same thing will go here. They're just not going to second-guess the officer. They're going to give, potentially, the officer the benefit of the doubt. So that's what we see. We see it over and over again. As soon as the defendant, officer, takes the witness stand, all bets are off in terms of the outcome of the case. It certainly seems to favor the defendants in these cases.
There's a story about 60 Minutes went into a story many, many years ago about the prosecution of someone that helped implement the Holocaust. And one of the people that had to testify against him finally got his day in court to put this person away and to sentence him to the death, to death. And he walks into the courtroom, and the defendant is sitting in a cage, and he collapses and falls and begins to cry. And everybody thought that because it stirred up such awful memories of what the Holocaust meant to him. And later, Mike Wallace interviews him, and he says that wasn't it. It was because when I looked at him, I saw that could have been me. In other words, this was a reasonable person set out in life that had gone astray, but they look like me. Now, when you get somebody that takes the stand on their own behalf, let's just say Chauvin or any of the police officers, and they're in front of a jury, do they, if they're good, humanize themselves and influence the jury more than anything else? Is that, in the best case scenario, what they do?
That's exactly what happens. You described it very well as to what goes on there. It humanizes them, and I think what happens is that jurors in some of these cases think, if not themselves, they think, well, you know what, my niece is a police officer, and I wouldn't want to second guess her in such a decision, or my next door neighbor's son is a police officer, or my next door neighbor, and they just don't want to second guess them. It does humanize the officers. And again, to your original point, it's an incredibly risky strategy for any criminal defense lawyer to allow their client to testify in their own defense, which is the client's right, by the way.
Professor Stinson, appreciate it very much. Thank you for enlightening us.
Oh, my pleasure.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.